Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And today our program brings to you, first up, two people who recount their lives in food, followed by two ladies, both called Victoria. Now, that's as close to a theme as we could get. But I think you'll find the stories really amazing, starting out with a chef who, his name is Luigi Diatauti, which means God help me, and his book about his restaurant, Al Tiramisu.
Chef Luigi, welcome to On the Menu. I'm not going to try your last name. I'm going to leave that for Anne. Can you do it?
Yeah. Diatauti.
God help you.
Yeah, well, we've actually met before. We just discovered, as we were chatting before we started recording this interview, and one of the reasons why I remembered is that Chef Luigi can always be recognized because he wears chef's coats, and instead of buttons, they're bow ties, like bow tie pasta.
That's correct. I love so much pasta that I even just a touch on my skin, as you know.
And your restaurant in Washington, D.C. is called Al Tiramisu, which is the most authentic or one of the most authentic Italian restaurants in D.C., right?
That is correct, yes. So we know it to be one of the most correct, authentic Italian restaurants. And we actually are going to celebrate next March 3rd the 18th anniversary. It's on 2014 P Street, Tryon Dupont Circle.
Yes.
I wonder why it's an Italian restaurant. After all, you've never worked in an Italian restaurant before, right?
Oh, who, me? Well, coming from Basilicata, what do you think?
But you've cooked all over. In fact, it's fascinating. There's a map inside the cover of your book, which shows two interesting things: the places that you've cooked, which are in red, and the places which you've run marathons, which are in blue. Now, there are slightly more of the red ones, but it's still,
it's still
rather a remarkable global hegira that you've been on.
True, Peter, yes. Actually, a few people who read my book, they'd be asking the same question, and one of the things is interesting, like, that probably not everybody know that I also am a runner, and, one of my goals also is, like, to run a marathon in every continent. As you notice, I run at the Hadubak in Australia, the Great Wall of China, Rio, and, Paris, and the most famous here in the States. I need to run soon the one in Africa, and then eventually I have to do also Rome in Italy, of course, and looking forward to also run the one in Athens, the original one from Marathon to Athens.
Oh, right.
But one of the things that I would like to add there, if I may, Peter, is that probably not everybody know that running a marathon, it takes also the same discipline that running a restaurant. And you have to be serious, you have to respect, and takes the same discipline, because like they said, everybody can run, but not everybody can run a marathon. If you don't train well, if you don't, listen to yourself, to your body, some people die. And the same thing with the restaurant. If you don't take it serious and look at the food cost and the quality and service and everything, staff and supply, you're probably going to fail. You're going to go out of business. So it takes really the same discipline. Not to mention that I like to eat a lot. So to compensate, I also have to run.
You actually talk about difficult times. After September 11th, 2001, you said we really had difficulty because no one was going out to eat.
Well, it's true. Obviously, like the whole nation had a difficult time at the time. It tried to recover and everybody were scared. Nothing happened, something like that before in the United States and probably the entire world. And of course, besides that, we also went through in a few other different situations. One last a few years ago for the economy during 2008. Between September 11 and 2008, we also had only on Dupont Circle, they were doing the sidewalk in three different blocks.
You talk about that in your book. Yeah. And you also talk about your trusted employees embezzling from you. And I know this kind of story because I owned a restaurant in Philadelphia. And that's the one thing that nobody tells you about is to worry about people stealing from you.
It's true, but, I like to believe that I have a great staff. I always try to motivate my staff and try to involve them in the project of the, what the Tiramisu stands for. So they are involved, they feel that they are part of a great things. But as you know, and there is always like some bad apple, and unfortunately that can contagious some others, though.
Well, you survived and thrived, and you have a very star-studded clientele. Tell us about some of your more interesting customers.
Well, I have a lot of them. I mean, like, but I hate to say that, but what happened at Tiramisu, we had to stay at Tiramisu.
Well, we are going to ask you a question, and you don't have to answer it, but you can certainly offer your opinion. Do you think one of your famous guests, who was a senator and then the Secretary of State, do you think she's going to run for president in 2016?
I hope so. At least then I can say that I have the future with the President of the United States.
I hope so, too. Interestingly enough, the last time we were in Rome proper, which was Christmas time about 4 years ago, we went to a restaurant called Da Sabatino.
Uh-huh.
And the walls there are covered with photographs of celebrities from around the world who have dined there. And one of them is the famous William Jefferson Clinton.
There you go.
In at least 10 photographs out of the ones that are on the wall.
This book is not just a cookbook. It's 100 of your favorite recipes. It's also a memoir. So it traces your whole career and your life from when you were, the first picture is you as a little boy tending to the your cattle.
This book, like, this is not just like the classic cookbook. A couple things that I'm very proud of. It's a book that everybody can read, and once you start, it takes you for a journey. Basically, it takes you like all my career, the way I grow up, where I've been working, the early time of Tiramisu and the Tiramisu today. I think that there is a beautiful message among the journey. It emphasizes, like, you know, the respect of Mother Nature, the respect of the food per se, and how we should pay more attention to the way we eat, and, you know, like, get a little bit more knowledge about food. And also a great message, I believe, for the younger generation, for the next younger generation of chefs. I like to believe that this book, it probably changes the way that the future cookbook will be done. As you notice, almost in every recipe, there is a beautiful story on top. Some are not just a personal recipe or family recipe, and some are just like a classic Italian recipe. But the whole point why they are in my cookbook is because of what happened with me with that recipe, what kind of influence I had with my customer, with the person that I mentioned. So that, again, it's a directly line. For example, when you read or when you cook some of my recipe in that book, it's like I talk to you directly. So I think it's a great way to, you know, interact with anybody who like to cook or they are interested or like in the food world.
Now, you have two other interesting things in each of the paragraphs. You have a little thing, you call it the Italian primer or primer. And there it seems like you're saying, and this is what you learn from making this dish.
Correct, yes. You are absolutely right. What I do also in my cooking class, which I had the one yesterday, I host like twice a month. And when basically I give three recipes, and we talk about, of course, the history of each recipe, what is behind, etc. But most important is, like, I always like to make a point for the student or to whoever attended the class that you don't have to just, like, this is not just like this recipe alone. Once you learn and master this technique, then you can use your imagination and a few fundamental, and you can make so many other things. That's very important because I don't want to have people limited or anybody who cooks at home limited and stay in that particular cage, which is only that recipe. Besides that recipe, I also wanted to people learn the technique. And then, of course, you change the ingredient according to the season or according to your knowledge or your palate.
Now, you also have a recommendation for a wine to go with each dish, which, of course, is entirely appropriate. But I'm going to backdoor you on this one and say we just happened to receive a shipment of two bottles of Ripasso from the Valpolicella region in Italy. What should we cook with that?
Well, Ribasso is one of my favorite wine because particularly it's really good alone, but also it's like a young version of the Amarone, which is like the top of the line in that area, Verona, you know, in the Veneto, etc. The Ribasso, it's good for some pasta with some red sauce, but I want you to also know that it's one of the great wine if you want to have it with the fish. The reason why, because it doesn't have a lot of tannin. So any wine, for example, let me say that I just want to, like, there is no reason why people should not have a red wine with the fish. Just the meat that we have to destroy. There are a lot of fish that, depend on the way you cook the fish, that actually you most pair with red wine. But in particular, I wanted to say that the Ripasso and some of the light Pinot Noir and also the Cerasuolo from Palermo, which only grows in Palermo, those are the three fish that they actually go well also with the fish. I mean, there are three wines that go with the fish because, as I said, they are low in the tannin. They have a lot of perfume, you know, a lot of bouquet, so they go with the fish. So
and Luigi knows what he's talking about because he has a diploma as a sommelier.
Yeah, well, I was thinking it might go very well with salmon, right?
Yeah, but it depends on how you cook. If you steam the salmon, if you boil it, then it's not okay. But if you grill or you put some sauce, definitely.
Well, I'm going to grill it. If we have it, I'm going to grill it, and I'm going to do something you probably don't even do. I'm going to, after 4 minutes under the broiler, I'm going to peel the skin off, and then I'm going to reserve the skin. And then when the salmon is fully cooked and the stove is turned off, I'm going to put the salmon back in the oven and I'm going to make myself crisp salmon skin.
Listen to you, Peter. I think I should give you an application.
Yeah, that was from moving back in these.
You said that you have a couple of bottles. Send the one in Washington. You know, I said something to you.
here's the funny thing that happened, Luigi, with we thought this wine was coming, but it didn't arrive. And then out of the blue, we got an email from DHL, the shipper, saying this wine had arrived for us. Now, how are we going to handle it? Because this particular supplier isn't imported into the United States. So it's the first time we've had to deal with duty. I hope the duty on these two bottles of wine isn't too much. I had to agree to pay whatever duty it was before they would ship them on to us.
Now, Luigi, you have some dishes that are great favorites with certain celebrities. Some you even name after the celebrity. You were talking about, who was it, got tears in his eyes with the... Mr. Handsome.
George Clooney.
George Clooney got tears in his eyes when you gave him some dish. What was that?
Well, he loves the truffles. He loves the branzino. He actually loves everything. Actually, we saw him recently. He came as a guest at the restaurant. And I told him, like, I joke with him, and I said, you know what? You are like me. I eat a lot, and I eat fast. So, yeah, it's really, really, like, he really enjoyed food. And, you know, he's been our guest for a long time. I mean,
he has a house on Lake Garda.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So he knows what he means, like a good Italian food. That's right. What makes me proud.
Burt Lancaster, why do you suppose he spoke fluent Italian?
Well, because he spent, I believe, probably 4 years in Rome during the making of the movie The Gattopardo. Don't ask me how to translate in English because I don't remember.
It's The Leopard.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And this was probably in that movie, one of the first appearances of Claudia Cardinale and Alain Delon. And it's it's one of the beautiful movies. It's one of the classic back home in Italy. I don't think here is a blockbuster.
Yeah, I've seen it.
It's great. And so that's why I know that he learned Italian during the make of that movie, because it's a beautiful, historical movie, social and political. It's like a lot of great messages, over the Italian history in that movie.
My guess is Burt Lancaster wasn't his real name anyway. he was probably Bruno or something or other. So he got off to a flying start. Well, listeners, we have two things to say in conclusion. The first of all, if you can't get to Washington D.C. to enjoy this wonderful restaurant, this book will make you feel like you're there.
And
even the name means cheer you up.
Bravo, Anna, yes.
And secondly, if you're within 100 miles of Washington D.C., go to Al Tiramisu for dinner.
So I think it's a great idea.
I think it would be just a great experience. And the next time we're in your, Al Roker calls, neck of the woods, we'll be sure to come and see you.
Please do, and can't wait. And probably we're going to spend a couple of days together in the kitchen. So I take the secret of the skin off of someone, whatever you said, and I give some of mine. How about that?
Sounds great.
And I'll drink Prosecco.
Yes. Oh, sounds good, too.
All right. Ciao, ciao, Luigi.
Thank you so much to both of you. Big hug, and hope to see you soon.
And we'll be back with a somewhat different life story right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Next up is recounting her life in food is a memoir by Leah Eskins of Slices of Life, which happened to be the name of her column in the Chicago Tribune Review. You can read this book front to back and just get the thrill of the storyline.
And the marvelous part about it is it's a story that's not yet over. And although we didn't talk about Leah about a sequel, I'm guessing that 10 or 15 years down the road, there might be one. Anyway, Slices of Life for your enjoyment.
When I got this book, Slices of Life, subtitled A Food Writer Cooks Through Many a Conundrum by Leah Eskin, I thought, oh no, another memoir. I'm not going to really like this. And then I started, and by damn, you're funny.
Thank you.
And I wish I could sort of get into your head and find out what really got you inspired for these stories, because they're in any regard, they are about food, but they're personal, either contemporary events or events in your personal life that sparks each individual story. I just wonder, what tells you that you got a good thing going with this particular event and recipe?
In other words, how do I choose what I read about?
That's a good start.
What sparks your imagination? Because you do have a lot of imagination here. Reminiscence with little stories coupled with a recipe.
Well, I'm really glad you are enjoying the book. I should say probably the best inspiration I have is that the book grew out of a column that I write for the Chicago Tribune, which is called Home on the Range, and it's a weekly column with a recipe. And a weekly column comes with a weekly deadline, and I find a deadline very inspiring.
Yes, right.
You're telling me.
I have a fundamental question. How do you come up with a good idea every week?
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at.
Yes, I'm trying to be a little more direct about it.
Okay. Well, I do keep a list of things that are kind of flitting through the back of my mind. Oh, that's a funny word, or that's a good new trend, or that a disastrous thing that happened in my household. And then once a week when that deadline rolls around, I look at my list of ideas and see if I can pull it together along with the recipe and make it work.
Now, your deadline is Saturday because the column prints on Sunday?
My deadline is Thursday, a couple weeks before the column runs.
Oh, okay, yeah. Wow. So you got quite a little bit of lead time. Have you ever run it really close?
Almost every week, yes.
Almost every week. Now, the reason I ask the question is the name Scott Adams will be familiar to you, I'm sure.
Yes.
He created Dilbert, and I heard him speak at a conference once, and he chose his topic, which is really very interesting and something we can come back to. He talked about all the columns that his editor, the lawyers, refused to run, and he revealed them. But he said his process of creating his column was very interesting. He would get up very early in the morning, and he would write the first two, forget what they call them, cells, is it? And then he would go away. And said, and by the time he came back in the afternoon, he said the third plate just played itself. I knew what it was going to be. When I started out, I didn't have a clue where it was going to end up.
Mm.
But it just automatically ended up somewhere that people thought was funny.
And you're not talking columns, you're talking about comic strips.
Well, it's the same, it's a creative process. In his case, he has to do it every day. It must get difficult sometimes.
Right. And I think my process is probably pretty similar. I start with an idea, and it goes somewhere, but not always, never actually the place I expected it to.
Okay, so it's very much the same thought process as at work.
Yes.
You had a column before this, but, you know, if we might really get to the nitty-gritty of all this stuff, you determined you were going to be a journalist when you were, what, how old?
Oh, The summer I turned 17.
But you were going to be doing a different kind of journalism.
I imagine myself writing long magazine stories about important topics.
You're occupying at least 15 pages of the New Yorker or something
Absolutely.
Like that?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Or if not, the Atlantic Monthly. Or...
Right.
Who were you reading along the times you hit on this formula for a column?
I don't know if there's like a particular model that I have in mind. And I have to admit that I don't read very much food writing.
Boring.
Yeah, it doesn't, much as I love food and much as I love writing, there's not that much food writing that I enjoy. But I guess anyone who can tell a good story is appealing to me.
Now, do you enjoy your own food writing? I think you do.
I do.
So there you go. So there's a lot of boring food writing out there, but you think yours is pretty good.
Well, when I'm writing, I try to amuse myself. And if I can get to the point where I make myself chuckle, then I think, okay, I've done my job for the day.
Yeah, well, you had me chuckling a few times.
You had me
Glad
chuckling
to hear it.
A lot, too.
I like the one about the dog. The dog that once got, or once thought he got a whole leg of lamb, and he's since been begging for something approaching that ever since. And you'd compare this dog to a gambler who returns time and time and time again to a casino following his big win to make sure that he gives all the money back.
Exactly, and that was our method of dog training, although I'm not sure how successful it was.
Now, I mean, you were able to write from home once you started having a family.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I understand that one because that was my situation as well. They're grown now, and you're really hooked on. How do you continue doing it is my question. I'm never getting right to the point.
How do I continue doing what I do?
Yeah. I did a monthly column as a restaurant editor for a city paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point where I had a feeling that my vocabulary had been diminished to a total of 250 words.
Because that was your length?
No, it was because that's what it was always about, the same thing and the same thing and the same thing.
I see what you're saying. Well, I suppose there will come a time when I have that feeling and I'll think, okay, I've done this enough, time to go on to something new, and presume that day is coming. But the good thing about what I do is, though it is a food column and though it always includes a recipe, the story part is totally open, and it could be a story about a favorite pair of shoes, or it could be about my exasperating dog, or it could be about something in the news. So I feel like there's a lot of latitude to explore topics that are of interest to me.
Yeah, well, that's how I see it. I see that part of it as the most important element of the column rather than just the recipes.
I'm glad you see it that way, because that's how I see it, too. I always try and, I tell my editor, I try and have at least one sentence that links the story to the recipe, but I don't feel obliged to have more than that.
Besides,
I understand.
Besides, anyone can come up with a recipe.
Yes.
Not everyone can write something wryly humorous successfully every single week. But I have a sort of a slightly different question. Why now to publish this as a book?
Well, that's a good question. I think when I started and as I was working each week, I had in the back of my mind, well, someday these will all stack up and be a book, and I'll just keep stacking them up in a pile over here, and someday that it'll be a kind of a memoir.
And what was the trigger?
Well, I tried to put it together into a book a little while ago, maybe about 4 years ago, say, and it didn't necessarily work. And now that I've finally finished it and it is a book, I just needed a longer arc. I think I needed to kind of live through a few more experiences and have my kids get a little older and to have it have a kind of shape. And I think I just got to a point where it felt like it had a shape as a memoir, and it could work.
And I can't remember if we said this before we came on the air or not, but this is actually a compilation of every column you've written, starting from the beginning.
No, definitely not.
Oh, no.
If we did that, it would be many volumes.
Then I misunderstood. I mean, so they're in the order in which you...
They are in chronological order. Yeah. I think I've written something like 500 of these at this point. Nobody wants to read 500 columns, including me.
That's like my slide to Central America. One more.
Yeah, you keep someone. We've only been together for 36 years or 37 or something like that, and I have so far resisted.
I thought it was 40.
Is it 40? Yeah. No, it is 40. So, I don't know. I've lost my routine. Anyway, the trip to Central America you're referring to was taken with somebody else. And she doesn't know why I'm not interested in looking at the bloody pictures. And there's a column in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Leah, this is throwing a curve at you, but pick out one of your most favorite that you feel that really shows your style, combination of narrative with recipes.
Okay. Well, one that I like is a story I wrote right after 9/11.
Oh, I know that one. Okay.
And
I like that too.
Thank you. At that time, my daughter was starting preschool, so she was 3, I guess. And it was actually her second day of preschool, and I spent the day at school with her, and then when we left preschool, we realized all these terrible things had happened. And I came home, and I did what moms do, which is I made cookies. And later I wrote this story about it, and the story is just about comfort, and it's about ritual, and it's about doing what you can do, and sometimes it's something very small, like making cookies, but for a mom with 2 small kids at home, that was the best thing I could do, was to give them a sense of comfort and home. And so I like that column because I'm trying to pull together some different strands. And I also like it because the recipe is chocolate chip cookies, and who doesn't like chocolate chip cookies?
Exactly. Another question. I like that, by the way. I like that particular piece. It's interesting you selected that one, too. I was just kind of pondering and curious over how you titled your chapters.
Okay. Well, as we were saying, though the book definitely does not include all 500 columns I've ever written, it is in chronological order, and it begins more or less with a little preface about romance, and then it kind of picks up when our daughter is a baby, and it moves through our oldest as a teenager. So it's in chronological order. And the chapters are kind of a little set up to what was happening at that point in our lives as a family, and then the stories that follow fit into that time period. And so the chapter titles are written as though they were the instructions in a recipe, and they give a sense of what was going on in our life at the time. The first chapter is called Fold, and this is the period where we were kind of combining our lives into a family, and then the next chapter is called Separate, and this is where my husband actually moved to Baltimore, and I was in Chicago, he for his job and me for my job, and so we were running a family from 2 different cities, so...
And he's also a journalist.
He's also a journalist, yeah. Yes. So each chapter title kind of has the action involved that was going on in our family. And then the last chapter is actually called Let Rise, which I hope is how I feel about having teenagers and letting them start to take over their own lives.
Right. Well, it's a beautiful philosophy of child rearing and of how you handle your own life, I guess,
Thank you.
And so what else do you want us to know about this book? Sweets a lot.
I like sweets a lot. It's true. There's a lot of desserts, and it's very opinionated both in its approach and its recipes. I didn't try to have exactly 16 appetizers or something like that. It's things I like. I think what I want people to know is that it's 2 things. It's both a memoir, and you can just read it front to back and enjoy it as a memoir, and you don't have to make a single recipe.
Yeah, I like that,
but
too. I like that a lot.
Yes, there's no need to cook to enjoy the book, but it's also a cookbook, and you can use it from the index back and find something you'd like to make and make it and maybe even read a story to go along with it. So it functions in 2 different ways.
Yeah, I think I should point out, by way of encouraging people to get this book, that you've been twice nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. Now, that's an accomplishment.
Thank you.
And I think that it's so readable that I want to sort of emphasize that. And I think that most people can relate to the episodes in your life as well. It's on that level, sort of, what do you call that, general appeal?
Good. I hope it has general appeal.
Yeah, I hope, too. I wish you a lot of success with this book.
Thank you so much. Again, let me
repeat, it's Slices of Life, which it really is, isn't it? A food writer cooks through many a conundrum. And we're speaking to Leah Eskin, the author of this book. And congratulations on making this work as a memoir and as a live, sort of like a life ride, I think I'd like to put it.
Well, thank you. It's been a lot of fun talking with both of you.
Right, Leah. Thank you.
And don't go away, because we'll be right back after a short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
And here we are, as we said, back with stories of the two women named Victoria. And I'm assuming it's a good name because both of the women we talked to, you'll see, are very smart and very nice. And they have wonderful stories as well. The first one actually is Victoria Armory, who I think she was calling us from Madrid, who is not only an expert on entertaining, hospitality in general, socializing, but she has a wonderful line of condiments that she's going to talk to us about. Victoria Armory, I found your story compelling for a number of reasons and also your products. Let's start with who you are. You are born and bred in Spain, in Madrid. And you come from a family, the Count and Countess de la Maza, who were very, very involved with entertaining. So as a natural extension of your early experiences, you've become an entertaining person, right?
Well, me growing up in such a large family, and we entertained a lot. So it comes very naturally. I don't get flustered when I have, you know, when I invite 10 people over and suddenly 20 show up. I sort of feel like it's in my DNA to be able to whip something out of nothing. And so I love it. I love entertaining. I love having people over, and I love making everybody feel comfortable at home. And I think it's a great pleasure for me to have people come and for me to cook for them. It's my way of giving back.
Well, what led you to actually create product? You have a line of savory condiments, which I think are exceptional.
Oh, you're so nice and so kind.
I have to tell you this before Peter does it. I ate the romesca sauce out of the jar with a spoon.
Well, I think it's great. That's good. It's a great sauce.
So good.
I love it.
Yeah, but your products taste natural and pure. But it's
right.
Yeah, isn't it a leap to actually start producing these products?
I wanted to make something that was an everyday product. And what could be, I mean, romesco here in Spain, so we have romesco with, not with everything, but we have romesco with grilled vegetables, and a great way to enhance a boring grilled vegetable in a way. And that's sort of like the whole concept of the sausage, is I wanted to make something that was an everyday product and something that was on everyday ingredients and sort of elevate them to, you know, fantastic.
But what prompted you to actually start doing that? I mean, was there something that you said, I don't like the mayonnaise, or I don't like the romesco, or I don't like the ketchup?
Well, it took us, you know, we made up all sorts of different flavors. And we just came up with the nine that we created, which were our favorite. We tried individual herb mayonnaise, and they sort of didn't work so great, but the ketchups were just amazing, which is great from the very beginning. The PUPs took, we had to try different peppers and see which ones blended well together. And the romesco was also like a one kind of, we did it, it was perfect, it was done, it was good to go. We put it in a bottle. So some of the ones had a little bit more work, but they really are just really pure, and they have, as you can tell from the jars, I mean, they don't have that many ingredients. And I think that's why they're so good. It's because they're really clean.
So you live between Madrid and New York now, though, right?
I live outside of New York. I live in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Okay.
I come to Madrid. I mean, now it's actually my children's spring break, so we're here visiting my family. And I come to Madrid two or three times a year. Unfortunately, very short visits.
And the sauces are made where?
The sauces are made outside of New York. They're made between New York State and Connecticut,
They've always been made there. We've talked to a number of people who have, if you like, overseas products, and inevitably they come to the conclusion that because of all our regulations here in the United States, they need essentially to bring the recipe here and then have someone make it here. But for you, that was natural anyway, because you live here most of the time.
Right, exactly. But I definitely wanted them to have a very, very European feel to them and very European flavor profile. And that's why they're made with olive oil, and they have that very simple way of how we eat in Europe, you know.
I mean, some of these are just so interesting, like sherry ketchup and champagne ketchup. And then the two varieties of piri piri sauce. I mean, that really is, I mean, it may be every day to you, but it certainly is a great new enhanced tool in somebody's pantry for making interesting foods.
Yeah, I had it. Right. I had it with burgers the other day. It was really good.
And you can tell the difference, right? You can tell. It's sort of like what I was explaining, that I wanted an everyday product. I wanted something that we can use every day. And what is it that Americans love? It's like, you know, ketchup and mayonnaise, obviously. But just with elevating the profile. And when I looked at the ingredients on how I make ketchup at home, really, there are not that many things you can play with. I'm not going to make it with, you know, yellow tomatoes or make it with... And so the sherry was sort of like a great addition to the depth of flavor.
Oh, yes.
And it also has roasted garlic and sort of like a very... It has the same ingredients that you would make in a classic ketchup, but just way better. Sort of the same thing with the champagne ketchup. It's a lighter flavor profile, but still a ketchup.
It's really funny because Heinz is still just about headquartered in Pittsburgh. It grew up here and, of course, made a great career out of 57 varieties, including ketchup. But they made one false step, which is they tried making a ketchup that was green, and it was a total disaster. Now your Piri Piri sauce is green, at least one of them is.
Yeah, right. The other one's red. Yeah.
So you're not afraid, but at least you didn't have already a red ketchup. You were just producing new red ketchups, slightly different colors of red.
Right. Exactly. And I love the way that the smoky barbecue ketchup is slightly darker in color than the other ones.
Right.
Because it has that sort of, well, it's made with pimentón, which is, as you know, Spanish paprika, and it's what gives it that wonderful sort of smokiness to it. And it's also made with red wine vinegar, which is darker in color than champagne vinegar but it's a difference. So it sort of adds a depth. I just adds another layer of flavor. But yeah, I wasn't afraid of the green Piri Piri because I just think it's a great color.
Oh, yeah. Now, you are an award-winning author, cook, and a TV personality. So you're a writer, which you have all the components for making a great success out of this condiment line. Probably
well,
the
thank
best
you.
Spokesperson here.
I love doing it. Really been a fantastic, fantastic project. It was more than a project, but it's been a great experience to get to where I am right now.
Tell me this. How do you process difference in Spanish restaurants or cuisines or anything from when you were growing up until now, we'll call it post El Bulli?
The food in Spain is, I think it's totally different. The sort of odd cuisine in Spain has really evolved since I remember growing up here when I lived in Madrid 30 years ago. The restaurants when I was growing up were obviously, you know, great restaurants, but it was really sort of sophisticated home cooking, which is how the memories I have of,
right,
you know, really fine dining in Spain. So it was like how you would eat at home, but just a little bit more refined,
right,
or much more refined. And I think that El Bulli has taken that refinement and taken it to the stratosphere, because there's no way you can make that food at home.
Oh, heavens.
There's just no way. So it's a totally different dining experience. I think that when you dine at restaurants and you dine and all the restaurants that El Bulli and his disciples have opened up and whatnot, it's totally different. There's no comparison.
Now, if there's a signal event, I think we've sort of tried to track this. It was probably Juan Marie Arzac when he went off to visit with Paul Bocuse, and he came back with totally revolutionary new ideas about what Spanish food could be. And he's now, he's the same age as I am, I know, because we swapped stories about that when I interviewed with him. So I know he's 71, but it's happened in his lifetime and probably in the last 25 to 30 years.
Yeah, well, of course.
I mean, you know, in Spain, the really odd cuisine was Basque,
right,
and which is where all these people that you're mentioning are from. And
right.
It was just, but it was still very much sophisticated home cooking. It was still something that if you had the ability, you could somehow replicate it. You had the right ingredients and whatnot. Now it's impossible. Now you just can't do it. There's just no way.
Well, you know, the thing, as I understand it, is, in fact, that thing that distinguishes even the experimental cooking, not counting El Bulli, because I think that was a singular event or occurrence and situation, and who knows what will happen next with the school. But yeah, but the thing about the great cuisines of Spain is that even in more experimental segments, such as the Basque region, they always related back to the traditions, the roots of Spanish Most people didn't do that. Most other cultures never did that. Yeah. You look at the new Nordic cuisine, and they're not about the roots of their cuisine. You don't put live ants in a cocktail glass. Which they did. You know, he does that.
That doesn't sound like appetizing.
And we interviewed a French chef in London who said that he went to the pop-up dinner there, Rene Redzepi did, and he looked in his dessert coupe, and he said the little ants were trying to get out saying, "Don't eat me, don't eat me."
Oh.
That's a little out there. But now, you see, you're back with number one restaurant in the world is the Salar Con Roca, with the Roca brothers. That's number one in the whole world. Have you ever eaten there?
Well, no, I haven't.
Did you ever go to El Bulli?
I never went to El Bulli. I just never was able to get it.
I know.
Never got a reservation.
It was tough.
You had to get yourself really well organized.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
And, you know, with children and schools and whatnot, it's very complicated to make a 3-year reservation. I never did.
I'm still trying to figure out how I managed to arrange for us to go to Arzak, Martin Bersetegui, and Mugaritz, all in the span of a 2-day period.
Wow. That's impressive.
Now, are you going to continue making products? I mean, are you adding to your portfolio?
So, really, what I would love to do, yes, the answer to your question is yes. What I would love to do is actually start developing other areas in the supermarket. I think that a collection of 9 condiments is enough in that particular area. I would love to explore other departments and other areas in the supermarket. Maybe do something that goes with the condiments, some sort of chip or some sort of torta. You know, what's wonderful is that I'm going to, tomorrow actually, is the Gourmet Fair, the equivalent of the Fancy Food Show in Madrid. So I'm sure I'm going to get tons of ideas to see what new products are coming up or new ideas.
I do have a suggestion. I do have a suggestion for you, Victoria.
Tell me.
But we haven't tasted all 9 of your flavors, but it seems to me that the world is always crying out for a new barbecue sauce, and you would be just the person to create one.
Well, I have to tell you that there's so many. We actually did not make a barbecue sauce on purpose because there are just so many. They're just so many. If you go to the supermarket, the barbecue sauce area is immense. So we made a sort of like an in-between. Actually, it's still a ketchup, but because it has that smoky paprika, it sometimes feels like a barbecue sauce. You can use it as a barbecue sauce.
Yeah, I was going to say, you did that already.
Yeah, well, I'll try that.
Smoky barbecue ketchup.
Try that because...
Yeah.
Well, it's like a sophisticated barbecue sauce, but it's still a ketchup. I mean, it's a ketchup, but it has a little bit of the barbecue flavor. So I would love to do other things in the supermarket. I would love to do some sort of bread, torta kind of scoop thing that you can eat with the tiris. I don't know. I'm trying to see I keep walking to the supermarket trying to see what sort of spaces there are, what sort of holes there are.
Yeah, I mean, check out Jose Andres' line of special gourmet Spanish products. I mean, they're very good. I don't know if you know them or not.
Did you like them?
Yeah, they're very good.
Like them?
Yes.
But he's selling a regular size bag of barbecue chips potato chips for $5.
Well, can you imagine?
Right. Well, I don't know whether they're moving off the shelf or not. The price point seems to me that the price point above $3.29 is probably already too high.
Well, yeah, I think I have one question before we close this. All our listeners are going to know where to get or how to get these. I mean, do you have a website?
So I have a website. It's called www.victoriaamory.com. We are also on a few other websites. We're on Food 52.
Oh, yes, it's good people.
Which is, you know, right. And we are already in some stores. We're about, I would say, like 20 stores. We are in the pasta shop in California, and then I think within the next 2 or 3 months, we're starting to distribute now nationally, so we'll be in a lot of stores. But there's a list of stores on my website, and as we start shipping to them, you know, will be, I'll be putting all the names down so that people can go and find them.
I think I saw a display in my local Whole Foods, but I could be wrong. Is that possible? I know I saw a display of your product somewhere.
Oh, really? I don't think we've shipped to Whole Foods yet. I'm working with some of their distributors, and it takes a while to get into the system.
I'm sure it does.
Sure, we're not in Whole Foods yet. You're in California, right? Where are you?
I thought I saw them somewhere, but I could be mistaken, too.
Oh.
I'm sure you'll get there.
Are you in California?
No, we're in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. We are going to be in Pennsylvania. We are going to be... I know we just shipped somewhere there.
Uh-huh. Could be.
Might have been Giant Eagle.
Could be. Well, at any rate, hopefully we'll run into each other at the Fancy Food Show in New York City, huh?
Perfect. I will be there.
Great. Well, we will be there, and we will be looking for you. And
okay.
Yeah, and it was a real discovery, and it's nice talking to somebody in Madrid, even if I can't be there.
I know, it's wonderful.
I love it, yes.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you, Victoria, and good luck. Continued success with your product line and with all of your other writing and other ventures.
Thank you so much.
These sauces are so great. It seems like they should have better names than ketchup and mayo, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess so.
But they're household words, and these products ought to become household products in your household if you really respect fine condiments as we do and as Victoria makes them.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net. Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Victoria Ho, your product is so good that my housekeeper stole 2 bags of it.
I think I steal it from our test kitchen as well multiple times, so she is not alone.
Well, you now have a test kitchen, but basically you started out. You have the entrepreneur's dream of a story to tell about how you got started.
Yes. I guess I could say it started with one tiny little pot and one very big dream, 100 hungry friends and their friends, and about 1,000 test batches. Out of my partner Noah's Beverly Hills apartment kitchen after college. So that was the very first kernel that was popped. We now, 8 years later, have our own kitchen in Los Angeles.
I should mention, of course, the title or the name of your product and the company. It makes a lot of sense because it pops a lot.
Right. We certainly do that, yes.
Well, when did all this, give us a time frame, when did you start with the popcorn?
The very first recipe that was perfected was our original clandestine caramel. And
okay.
That recipe was put into development, I should say, in 2005. And PopSalt officially launched a year after that.
But it was...
It
was your partner Noah's idea, but did you like popcorn too?
Yes. Noah actually began the company by himself. He was in Southern California. I was up in Northern California studying at UC Berkeley and putting in my young foodie hours there. Perfect place to do that, right? I actually did not have a chance to meet Noah until I actually graduated from Berkeley, and we met in 2009 at the Winter Fancy Food Show, of all places, in San Francisco.
Now, why were you there?
I was there because I love, those were my people, and every year since I could remember, since starting at Berkeley, I would find a way into the show by working for somebody, of course.
Uh-huh.
And that fateful year, it happened to be a young, very hardworking popcorn maker from Los Angeles. And from that day, he actually arrived at the Fancy Food Show that year with a product. There was very little packaging, not much branding. He was kind of a green thumb, but he had walked the show the year before and knew it was a make or break. He had to be there. This would, you know, put him to the next level, which is the dream that he really had for the company, which is bringing something handcrafted and made with traditional care to the world. And that truly is, in a sentence, it's easy to say, but in practice, it's going from a farmer's market or a lovely brick-and-mortar store to production on a scale that we at the time could not even imagine, which we're doing now. So I just simply, out of fate or luck, happened to meet him at that show, and it probably took about 10 minutes of us speaking to each other to realize that there was something happening that could make this great.
How great.
And it really, I mean, we now every year have done the food show in San Francisco since that first year, and being there in Moscone every single year is a real treat for us. It's our one vacation. It's also the place we met, so it means a lot to us, that community.
Well, it's frenetic.
Now, is this a romantic story as well as a business story?
Well, we like to say we keep it personal. Personal things personal, but I would say that you can probably taste in our popcorn a little bit of extra love, and you can judge for yourself where that comes from.
Just a little joke here. I guess you're now appearing in a movie as well, right?
We'll have to. I don't think anyone could ever play Noah better than he plays himself. So
no,
we'll figure out who's doing my role.
There's a movie just that's hitting the screen, the TV screens with publicity right now, which is named after Noah.
Oh, right.
I was joking with you just a little bit there.
I had to think twice about that.
Well, you're not very quick on the uptake either.
Now, let's talk a little. You know, I've heard this story before of somebody bonding over cupcakes in New York, by the way. And now they have a whole bunch of cupcake shops or bakeries. And, yeah. And in fact, I guess it's not that unusual. But you probably brought a lot of direction to the company because you have now how many different products?
We have currently 7 products that are being sold, and then we have 2 new flavors which are coming out in time for the Summer Fancy Food Show, so in a couple of months. And then within the year, we actually plan to debut 3 or 4 new flavors beyond that. And then we have also our snack size line coming out next month as well. And those will be our Pops the Littles. So
Pops the Littles.
Pops a lot, Pops the Littles.
That's cute. And is it all sweet caramel corn?
Currently our flavors lean towards the sweeter side.
Yeah.
My dear Noah has a very big sweet tooth, but one of our specialties is our handcrafted kettle corn. So as I hope you enjoy tasting, that is both a sweet and savory taste profile, which is quite addictive. And then some of our new flavors really are going to be more purely savory flavors as well. So things like our Roman Holiday, which are Italian-inspired herbs with Parmesan cheese, and our Tunisian Breeze, which is a spicy harissa-inspired flavor. So there will be something for everybody.
Now, you and Noah essentially taught yourself the business of
producing a food product, right? I mean, you didn't go to do that.
Yes, you could say that. I think what I bring to our table is just my traveling and the experiences that I've been blessed to have through my palate, which is flavor development, is really falls on my plate within our company. So all the research and development in terms of the spice blends is right up my alley. And Noah really learned the popcorn business from the ground up. So everyone makes really delicious popcorn fresh at home if they desire, but he really had to learn all the machinery and all the ways to make something that's handcrafted and scale it to a level where we could really produce it in large enough quantities to satisfy, you know, international distribution. So it's definitely self-taught. And you know what, Peter? We're learning every day.
I bet you are, too. You have some fairly major competitors out there because popcorn, for some reason, is everywhere. It really took off a couple of years ago. We've interviewed is it 279 degrees or what's it?
479.
479 yeah. degrees. Yeah.
So yeah. We know them well.
Yeah.
I guess the popcorn business competitors know one another's products pretty well.
We like to call them our colleagues, and Noah and I really, we've tried them all, and when we find someone or hear of someone who we haven't tried, we go out and we buy their products. We really feel that companies with good products run by people who care, truly care, there's room for everyone on the shelf. Go ahead.
Who was it that we interviewed whose family supplies all the popcorn popper equipment?
Kreider,
that's it.
Yes.
You know them too, I guess.
You guys are amazing. No, I was telling Ann earlier, Peter, that just from reading through your website, the places you've been and the stories you share are truly amazing. And I know you're veterans of the Summer Fancy Food Show.
Yes,
so
we are indeed.
So you've seen firsthand every year the popcorn quote unquote trend never quite seems to die out. But what we have learned is that the way that we are producing our product, so no artificial colorings or preservatives, producing it ourselves, still in artisanal processes and not mass manufactured, there are actually very few companies doing popcorn the way that we do popcorn.
It tastes so fresh.
So,
it's really amazing product with the nuts you select, the flavor profiles, the freshness. You don't feel that there's anything chemical in it at all.
Well, now, here's the last question that we need to know, which is where people can buy this. So I'm sure you are smart enough to figure out how to do that with a store locator on your website, but tell us those details so that people who are now lusting after your popcorn can go out and buy some right away.
Peter, you're hired. if they are not near a Whole Foods market.
Okay, so Whole Foods is one of your outlets.
Yes, particularly on the West Coast in California, in the Southern California region. They are also welcome at any time to please request it at their local Whole Foods if they would like it. A simple word to customer service goes a long way in helping us gain traction within that company. If they're not near Whole Foods on the East Coast, they can try their local King's Market or a Balducci's, and we will also soon be in Stop and Shop, hopefully, and Duane Reade in New York.
Do you have any?
They are also free at any time to visit our website, www.popslot.com, and they can order it by the case, under the guise as a snack for all their friends, and keep it to themselves.
That's great. Well, anyhow, so maybe we'll stop by at the Summer Fancy Food Show and say hello to you guys.
I would love to meet you and speak with you in person. And, of course, have you try our new flavors.
And I would like to try them,
great,
too.
Well, please give our kindest regards to Noah, and our congratulations go out to both of you for a really unique achievement. And the great thing about it is a unique achievement that hasn't stopped yet.
Well, there are very big challenges every day. Actually, Noah's quite envious of me that I'm the one that gets to speak with you both today. He, as we are still in our eighth year doing, he is in the kitchen today, of course, popping. So I will be joining him shortly, but I will definitely let him know that this was a treat for me, and we are honored, both of us, to have caught your eye and your taste buds, hopefully, and we hope to continue to feed you delicious popcorn.
Yeah,
till the end of time, I suppose, right?
I guess we could sum this up by saying, and we like your popcorn a lot.
Thank you so much.
We like your pops a lot.
That means a lot, considering how much I know you both have eaten. The adventures your tongues have been on.
thank you so much. It was a pleasure, just a pleasure to talk to you. You're a breath of West Coast fresh air on the program today.
Oh, thank you. Well, we've been having tornado warnings recently, which is bizarre. Who knows what's up with the weather? We want spring as well.
Well, until summer at the Fantasy Food Show, I'll say adieu.
Thank you so much. I look forward to meeting you in New York.
Right.
And thank you so much for your time. I really had a lot of fun.
And we had a lot of fun. We hope you had a lot of fun, too, and that you'll join us again same time, same place next week. And until then,
bye-bye.